Welcome back, everyone, to Judging Nerd Culture, where we talk about pretty much all the things we like just in this episode.
Yeah. There's going to be, I can't speak for you, there's going to be very little of hate in this episode. Yeah. Maybe bits and pieces, that's all.
Some criticism, possibly. But today we're doing a menagerie. We're doing another menagerie.
There's still only two of us, folks. Don't get fired up too much just yet. Specifically, if you read the title, I guess, about comics that we like.
Heck yeah.
We keep bringing them up, and it takes a long time to read, I don't know, an entire fucking comic series and stay caught up with it. So this is really the only way we're going to be able to hit a lot of the sort of the big ones without giving them each their own episode. And that would be like, well, you'll hear how difficult that would be when we get started.
Indeed. And I'm going to try and do a couple. I'm going to do one like Western comic and a couple manga.
Yeah.
In case anyone out there is like, that's not a comic book, in which case, fuck you.
I'm going to have sort of one from each of the principal pillars, a Western comic, a Japanese manga, and a comic from the internet. You know, the three nations that there are.
There's no fourth nation?
No. There's the World Wide Web. There's three W's.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that's why.
Okay.
That doesn't make any fucking sense at all. There's comics from other places, too. We should try to find some eventually, but like, yeah.
Yeah, but those are the three, like, America and Japan are the easiest to find us with our landlocked kind of VPNs and whatnot.
They're the most, you know, accessible by far, and just the most.
True.
But anyway, please, kick us off, would you?
Yes, let us get started. I'm going to start with the only Western comic that I have. And the Western comic I want to talk about is Saga.
Okay.
It's I believe it's Dark Horse or Image? Image?
Image.
Image. It's an Image comic. And I genuinely love this series. It's a lot more, I don't know, massive than a lot of the comics that I usually partake in. Not in size of issues or number of books, but in genuine scope of the world and universe.
We're gonna get into massive numbers of issues later, I have a feeling.
Oh, yes. So, but with Saga, it's about these two, enemies. They're on different factions of a war. And this war is a war so massive in this universe that it has encompassed the universe.
Oh, boy.
There are a planet and its moon populated by people who are either winged or horned, and the horned ones on the moon love their magical abilities, and the winged people on the planet love their technology, something along those lines, and they hate each other. So what do? Rope in the entire galaxy into a weird, almost civil war.
There are other kinds of, like, alien stuff involved, too.
Yeah. There's a fuckload of different aliens involved in this galactic battle. And, like, even though it is a war across the stars, it really focuses on the planet and the moon being the front lines of this whole, like, escapade. But the people involved, there's a lot of talk about, like, the politics behind things. There's interesting monstrous enemies. Some people who look like anteaters and weird, gross. What's that? The water bear? What's that called?
Tardigrade.
Yeah, it's this tardigrade looking thing. Sometimes there's all sorts of nasty space aliens, but there's also some really unique ones. There's an entire race called the Royals who are just gray people with giant TV heads.
Oh, okay. I love a good TV head. That's a like a fooly cooly move. Can't get enough personally.
And this doesn't happen until much later into the series, but you eventually get to learn more about their homeworld, and it's a very like old style monarchy in which there's king, queen, and then the paupers and the serfs and all that jazz, and people work the lands for the kings and the queens, but they're almost robot. Organic people, like their arms and parts of their bodies can morph into guns and weapons, and that's just how they exist. And the more royal you are, the more fancy your TV head is.
Sure.
some of the lower grade folk who just work the lands have these like old tube TV ass heads.
Is this so? The level of like scientific examination in this comic, is this something that they just present and it's like, be okay with this, it's just how it is, or do they get really into it?
The
like,
first one.
Like, okay.
Hard.
So this is not a Homestuck situation.
No.
Okay, because in that they, you know, they present something silly, you think it's a joke, and then they go way into the science. I for the type of comic you read an issue at a time, I like this take much better. I'm just like, okay, I'm just looking at this now. Don't think too hard about it. Like I'm okay with that.
They'll show you something wild and ridiculous and then establish a number of different rules regarding that thing, and then they'll stick to that consistency, that continuity. But otherwise, it's just like, this is a thing. Just live with it and move on.
Some visual gags get to just be that.
Exactly. Cool. My favorite thing with the tube TV heads, which there's only one main character who has a TV head. There's just the alien species that caught my eye the most.
Sure.
One of the things with them is, like I said, the type of TV gets fancier the more royal you are, with the king just being this massive 1,000-inch plasma screen TV, and everyone else just being kind of, you know, smooth and organic and fancy. But when they think, like, they can speak. They just talk, but sometimes their thoughts are projected through their screen,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they dream, and you'll see the dream through the screen, and that's just fun.
Yeah.
That their thoughts are displayed in that way.
So you have these two main characters, and like, confession time, you know, I'm the only person in my household, and probably my entire family, who isn't belly button deep in this comic series. Like, everybody I know in my whole life talks about this semi-regularly, and I haven't been avoiding it. I've just like, just never really opened one up. But you know, so I am operating through serious ignorance here. But there's these two protagonists. They are enemies, or two viewpoint characters, or whatever.
Yeah.
Does it always follow them, or is the page, the viewer, bouncing around the galaxy, or is it always like your character shows up and then they see how these things are? Like,
it primarily follows them and their family.
Okay.
It might sometimes take an issue for someone else to see where they're going, how they've gotten to where they are currently, but it always tracks back to what these two and their kid are up to.
Right.
What them and their found family, sure. what they're up to, what the protagonists are all doing. The protagonist being Marco, the horned moon guy, and Alana, the like fairy dragonfly winged person from that planet.
Are they so? The wingers, they have different kinds of wings?
Oh, yeah. Some of them are insect-like. Some of them are bird-like.
Neat.
Some of them are bat-like.
I'm into it.
There's no rhyme or reason. They just have them. And the two of them had a child.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow their species can breed together, which is not explained or, you know, talked right. about, but who cares?
Yeah.
And when their two, you know, factions found out about this, both sides put out a hit on them because they were like, oh, damn.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be friends. We have literally started a war that goes across the galaxy.
Yeah. This sounds familiar. Where am I getting this from? That movie, Warm Bodies, that was similar.
Very similar, okay. Yes. But then the rest of the story is them taking their newborn child and just escaping.
Mm-hmm.
And just constantly on the run from this overpowering political presence that hates them on both sides, no matter where sure. they go and who they talk to.
Is there a like a wronging and wronged party here, or is it more like as far as the war goes, or is it just like, you know, it's been going on forever kind of thing? Like,
my guess is likely the people from the planet were kind of dicks,
uh-huh.
but everyone's wrong. Like,
sure.
It's been so long, it's been so many years. No one actually,
yeah.
no okay. one seems to actually talk about like who's in the wrong. Everyone does atrocities. This is that kind of war.
Yeah, forever war. It's not as though there's anyone, like, there is a clear guilty party for anything.
Yeah, this isn't us versus Iraq the first four times. things have gone on too long to actually say, well, this is exactly what's going on.
Right.
Anyways, political nonsense aside, they continue to traverse the universe and try to escape and run and find a safe place to live with their daughter. And as they go along, they collect more colorful individuals as part of their party and collect some foul enemies to try to avoid and hide from as best they can.
Those are the, like, feathery, like, flightless chicken wing enemies?
Yes.
The foul enemies?
The foul ones. I hate you. But it's okay. So
any two hots? This doesn't seem like the type.
Not really. They don't specify too much numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a ship that they have that is a tree, a living, sentient tree rocket ship, and they just grow rocket ships.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Great.
And,
yeah, the sun, you know, it's, it just gets it direct.
And when they go inside, it's, like, fully furnished. It just so happens to grow in this.
Well, you know, if you manipulate the seed.
Anyways. But it's really
in the genetic code.
It really is quite cool. And, like, they have to feed it certain things and it'll, it'll move real good, go real fast, fly in a spaceship.
Yeah.
And, the, something I find incredibly entertaining is just some of the background stuff that happens. At one point, they're escaping a massive conflict that they don't want to be a part of. And to do so, they have to go past this basically ultimate source of death in the universe. Like, the universe's ultimate dark black hole. Except it's a living thing. It's a massive space baby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just looks like an infant with a Saturn ring around its skull. And empty black hole eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it just floats in space. And it sucks stuff in. And just consumes.
Great.
And it's unkillable, undefeatable. You have to not be struck by it. And so, it's like, that's awesome.
So you tune in to Saga. Tune in, I say, as if it weren't pages. But, you know, you log on, that's better, to Saga. To see the next instance of funky space shit that's cool to look at. That is what I'm getting from you so far. I'm sure there's more to it than that. It's hard to articulate in this short of a time.
It's true. I'm going to say that you tune in to see where the family is.
Yeah.
Because the whole shebang is narrated by the daughter, Hazel, who's, again, horned and has wings, and everyone considers her a sin for existing,
right.
Which is a whole lot of other stuff. And she's just trying to be a normal little girl, and it's you know, it's really cute. Like, the biggest draw is the way the family interacts with themselves and their friends. She has a little friend in Squire, one of the TV head guys, and they have interesting interactions, and she kissed an otter boy, I think, one time, and that was her first kiss, and then the otter boy. Got immediately murdered and she had to deal with trauma. So, you know, it's a lot of things. It's really interesting and
Classic. Everyone
has a chance to genuinely die. Main characters who seemed like they were going to be part of the family were off almost immediately.
Okay,
and
they're sipping on the, everyone says Game of Thrones. Fuck Game of Thrones. They're sipping on The Walking Dead. There we go. That's my comparison for this.
Perfect, exactly. But yeah, it's for its fantastic nature, incredibly realistic in the way the family interacts with itself. They had relationship problems in early on with their marriage being on the rocks, considering they were going through some horrible stress. But at the same time, as you tune in to, you know, watch these people try and survive, and it's really compelling, you also see this wild fantasy world full of God knows what, and it's just really a surprise, and it's just invigorating.
It truly is a saga.
Yes.
Of some kind.
And the last thing I'm going to say, again, incredibly fun read.
Yeah.
Haven't cried or anything, because I typically don't cry reading. I don't know. I just have a little more time to process than just watching something, I guess. But there have been some times where I'm just like, no, no, no! That kind of thing.
Yeah. Classic.
Because part of the attempted realism of it, I suppose, is that in dangerous situations, people are in danger. No one except maybe Hazel, hopefully, God hoping, has plot armor.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has a potential to die or become addicted to things or whatever else happens.
It is ongoing, right? It's not finished yet?
It's ongoing.
Neat.
And the last thing I saw, a major character after deciding to do the right thing, got impaled. And I was just like, no! Like, I haven't gone back since, because I'm just like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to see.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. You know, when the time comes and you catch up, it'll...
Oh, I'm going to love it. Ease the pain. There's also going to be multiple issues, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. Just like, let's jump back in with multiple things to read to get past that.
Oh, yeah. That's the best. Leave yourself a backlog.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But no, that's Saga in the briefest terms, and it's a lot of fun. Everyone should read it.
Right on. Yeah, no, I it's definitely, it's been on my list for, you know, however long, but there's a lot of shit on that list. And and a lot of it is, you know, easier to find legally. And I, you know, sometimes I just want to get the paper of something anyway for paper appeal. Comics smell good, people.
They
don't
do.
Know this.
I have the first six issues. The first six volumes.
Yeah. Okay, that's worth checking out then. I'm going to have to roll on that. Maybe we talk about it someday.
Hell
or
yeah.
Up through a certain arc or something.
It's kind of a lot.
Right. In any case, mm-hmm. Today I'm here to talk to us all about Order of the Stick. This is a webcomic. It's been going on for a million bajillion years, and I like it a lot. Can I recommend it? Almost certainly not. This is not for the usual reason that I can't recommend something, which is just that it has an asinine story with ridiculous characters that, like, it's extremely hard to follow. That's the home stuff, which I will not be talking about on this episode as an actual installation, just as a referent. But in Order of the Stick is a webcomic that, like, kind of gets a pass for being a nerd webcomic for reasons I'm about to describe, because it came way before sort of the era in which there were a bajillion of those that were all really fucking bad. It stands out in that at the beginning it was okay, and then it became really good, and then it continues to be really good, and it's just maintained itself. It never sold out, so to speak. We're not going to get into the history of all of that nonsense here. But the point is, Order of the Stick is about stick figures, and they are a party in 3.5 edition Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh,
and
that sucks for them.
I can't recommend it because the world of D&D has left them behind. 5th edition has consumed the past, and that is the only type of D&D I can ever recommend anybody try anymore. It just won. I'm sorry. There's nobody's still rolling 3.5 these days. If you are listeners, I apologize for your sad state of your life. But, it started off as literally just like kind of a gag-a-day. Characters are in a dungeon perpetually, the main party, and lighthearted rules are made, lighthearted jokes are made about the rules of Dungeons & Dragons 3.5th edition. They're just, you know, little gags about like, hey, isn't it weird that this thing can do this? Which, if you're like me, you see on message boards and just linked around jokes about like, here's this bullshit you can do in the rules all the time. Or just, you know, here's a funny thing that happens to fantasy characters, like real elementary in the beginning. And all that you really get is that the main party is going after the evil lich Zykon, which is spelled with an X, X-Y-K-O-N, and not a Z, which is already how you know that bastard's gotta go. but he's a really bad dude. And then eventually, and it happens gradually, but they just start actually, like, doing a story with characters that has stakes and, like, goals and you know, admirations and stuff, and then, you know, the nemesis, Zykon, starts doing bad things more that they need to then go and rectify in their quest to fight him, and other people get involved, and it just starts to become a real story.
So it, like, transitions from a weird, almost anthology to just, like, a actual serial?
Yeah, so it was always a, you know, like the events did follow. Like, you know, they would fight some goblins by some, like...
So it was always the same character.
Yes. Here's an example of early Order of the Stick, okay? The wizard goes into a room. The wizard's name is Varsuvius, and they are an elf, and in Order of the Stick specifically, all elves just ignore gender signifiers. Their language doesn't have any, and everyone else just calls them whatever, and they don't care. Just like any little twist on elves to make them remotely interesting at this point is necessary. And I like Varsuvius a lot. Elves don't normally get that from me. But V goes into the room and starts doing this huge long incantation, and in between, like, threatening the goblins about how this great surge of magic is going to destroy them. And it's just this humongously long text block. And then next panel, all of the goblins have fallen asleep. And the rest of the party walks in and they're like, hey, great job, V. You cast a spell and put him to sleep. And V's like, I didn't use my magic yet. That's the level, that's the caliber. That's kind of funny, right? But
that's cute.
That's the caliber of humor you're dealing with early on. And then eventually it's like, oh no, are they really dead this time? No, no, Durkan's been turned into a vampire? Spoiler alert, Durkan, the cleric, gets turned into a vampire at a certain point. It's bad news.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because he can't do...
Yeah, exactly. And because it's Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, everybody's like, well, we just lost because Durkan is our cleric and Varsuvius was missing at the time, and those are the only two party members worth a fucking damn because they can cast spells because they're high level and it's 3.5 and nothing else as anyone, nobody, other than, you know, the usual trickery and cowardice employed by the Order of the Stick, which is the name of the party. Everyone else is just kind of screwed over. I'm gonna do a flash through the cast. We have Roy Greenhilt, the human fighter. He's black, which is cool. We don't, you know, you just don't see that a ton in Lord of the Ringsian inspired fantasy media. And he is just constantly resentful of the fact that everybody assumes fighters are real dumbasses. people have put together the math, like in the forums and stuff, about what his stats must be, and he's supposedly incredible. Like, this guy's point buy is absurd. He had to have rolled his stats and gotten really lucky, because everything this dude does is, like, extremely good. You know, he's very strong, he's pretty smart, and he's the leader, undisputedly. He's dead for a good long time, which, in one of my favorite arcs where the party is split and they have to try to reconcile themselves and get Roy's body to Durkan, who can resurrect him, because, like, high-level characters are very rare in this world. That's one of the things I like about D&D that they hit, is just like, yeah, it's very uncommon to find people this powerful. And they start the game already really strong. But, in any case, you got Roy. You got Varsuvius, the elven mage, who is intensely arrogant about everything and only really gives a shit about grand arcane power and just wants to kind of get to Zykon to, you know, like, he does represent a threat to the world, and who could possibly study in peace with all of that going on, is basically the idea. This does eventually, spoilers are all the way fucking on, I might even go backward and put in a little warning, but this does eventually lead him to take a tempting deal with demons to achieve ultimate arcane power, which ends up fucking over lots of other things. Not in any way that was deceptive. The demons just told them straight out what would happen. I say him, you know, like most of the characters on the team say him. But this was before Singular They was, like literally the comic started before Singular They was really a thing on a lot of people's minds, like before it was a topic of the day and the dictionaries started weighing in and stuff. So like it wasn't in the writer's repertoire at that time is the only thing. The thing with this demon temptation with Varsuvius is, like, you know, there's a problem that needs solving. The demons, like, use illusions to show him a literal representation of, like, here's a way you could totally solve this problem without needing to take this deal at all. But if you do that, you won't get to feel what it's like to be this strong. And that fucks him over and he takes the deal. It's great. They're just like, hey, man, you could chop off your head. We'll send our imp to teleport your head to your master. Your master could teleport in and waste this dude easily and save you and then get you resurrected. It just, hey, you don't have to take this deal at all. No problem. But, like, then, you know, then he's got to cut his own head off. And also, like, what a pain.
Yeah.
In any case, Durkan, the dwarven cleric, for a really long time is kind of just a dwarven cleric. Like, he's the most criticized of the main characters for just kind of doing dwarf shit. He loves ale, but he doesn't like trees. And not really doesn't like elves as much, but definitely doesn't like trees. The most recent arc is about Durkan with the whole vampire business and all that. And how he, you know, kind of the vampire consciousness, like, takes over. It's an evil him who knows his memories, but, like, not all of them right at the start. And he is, like, kind of imprisoned within and is trying to distract the vampire by showing it certain memories to confuse it and stuff. It's hard to articulate in a way that makes it sound cool, but, like...
No, that makes sense. I got mm-hmm. what you're saying. But isn't that a thing in D&D that the vampires and werewolves are always intrinsically evil?
The werewolves are intrinsically evil in D&D, which I don't generally care for. The vampires, the way I handle vampires most of the time is kind of inspired by this. It is like a parasite, almost. Like it is an outside sort of a force. And he does wrangle it eventually, and then, like, hesitates just enough for the rest of the party to kill and bring him back. So Durkon's back on the team as of, like, three panels ago. Of most recent reading, because it's like a page comes out every week or so, you know, webcomic. He takes a while to kind of get heated up. For the most part, it's just whenever the party is attacked by cops or whatever, not necessarily cops, but by local law enforcement who are accusing them of doing things they totally did, Durkon is just sits there as like, no, I'm not going to actually fight in this one. Like, they're right. We should go to jail. We'll figure it out then. And they always do, but, like, the rest of the team's like, come on, Durkon, don't you be an outlaw with us? He's like, nope. And generally, he's right to do that. We've got Haley Starshine and Elan, no last name given. Elan is the bard, Haley is the rogue. They're both humans. I sort of put them together because the two of them hooking up is, like, a major thing. Like, their plot arcs intertwine together. But Haley's dad is an imprisoned rebel leader of a great resistance. And then eventually it turns out that Elan's dad is the tyrant crushing the resistance. So they get to that nation and have to figure their shit out. And, like, you know, they're loyal to each other well over any loyalty they have to their parents. It's not like they're not loyal to their parents, but, you know, General Tarkin, Elan's dad, is still out there, you know, scheming and plotting, but they've moved beyond him for now. It's an interesting time. And Haley is extremely covetous of money, but, like, the thing that gets revealed eventually is, like, oh, she's, like, sending off ransom payments to keep him alive and stuff, but those have all been disappearing. Like, the guy keeping him in jail is bad news. It's a whole thing. Varsuvius eventually remembers he has a familiar after getting some character development and, like, learning to just stop ignoring the fucking raven all the time, which the raven literally just pops into existence whenever the party remembers that he exists, and now is, like, a full-fledged team member. But the last guy is Belkar, the halfling rogue, who is, like, that guy who comes to the table and wants to play a real edgelord, like, jackass who just goes and kills peasants and stuff and does evil shit for fun. Like, that is that character, but as, like, a legitimate person in this world. And then eventually, like, when he's about to die, he's sort of visited by a vision of another character who would take a million years to get into, who says, hey, listen, Belkar, you're going to need to pretend to develop your character if these people are going to keep putting up with you for as long as you want them to. Like, your party is going to get tired of your shenanigans. And also, you're a halfling ranger who fights in melee. You're not that good. So, like, if you want to be, you know, continued to be relied upon, you're going to have to pretend like you care about anything. And then he proceeds to do that. But it's starting to sink in. The mask is starting to become the face. In any case, it's D&D, it's fun. I'm very invested in the plot right now, and again, I can't tell anyone else to do that unless you have very specific nostalgia about this edition of D&D, because you're not going to get through the fucking beginning otherwise. And that's Order of the Stick so far.
It sounds fun. I'm always a big fan of, not stupid, but just, like, goofy.
Yeah.
Storylines based in, like, hyper-serious settings, because I know that D&D isn't always super serious, but a lot of times it's a little too serious.
Oh, sure. But everybody does get in on the goofs in this. Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
There's also occasionally the Linear Guild shows up, which is just all of the members of the Order of the Stick, but, like, a bad version of them. Not created by magic or anything. They happened to all get together. And they fuck each other over from time to time. Currently, most of them are dead, so we're gonna see if that ever comes back around. But, like, you know, again, it's D&D. Death is expensive, but not priceless. Like, I was going to say it's cheap, but no, it costs, you need a big-ass diamond to bring someone back from the dead. It's the material component. Doesn't come around often, anyway.
Anyways. So, I'm going to do my number.
Oh, please, carry on.
Two. So, my number two is, getting into some of the, two mangas that I have. First up, I'm going to talk about, I think I'm going to talk about Black Clover.
Okay, carry on.
So, Black Clover is another Shonen Jump manga. It's got the protagonist everyone knows, and he does the same things every protagonist in every Shonen ever does. And he doesn't give up, and he keeps fighting. It's, you know, sounds like I'm being really, like, against it right now. But, like, that's why I like Shonen. Like, they're fun in that way. They're fun in that way. And I do enjoy that general archetype and that general storyline of we have these skills, we need to improve them in order to fight an ultimate evil or whatever the next big evil bastard is. And I know it's generally kind of simplistic, but that's kind of something I appreciate in some of these comics. The thing that I like about Black Clover is that it is another magical, like, universe sort of setting. And if anyone listened to the Nemesis, or the, not Nemesis, that's the name of one of the enemies.
Radiant.
Yeah, the Radiant episode, they might be well aware, I really, really love, like, hard magic rules, or any magic rules based on our setting.
Yeah, and watch it for the mechanics.
Yeah, weirdly enough, I really do.
Oh, yeah.
I love the mechanics of the universe, and I like to see what, you know, a character's abilities mean, and what they do. And, at first, in the first few chapters, the first few arcs of Black Clover, it definitely seems like the kind of storyline that I was like, yeah, okay, I get what's going on, I understand what this is. But it really does grow and develop a fair bit as time goes on. The main characters are Asta and Yuno.
Mm-hmm.
They're two random, possibly, fraternal twins. Mm-hmm. It's unclear. Seemingly, they're just two random kids who were born at the same time or at the same age and were abandoned at the same orphanage.
Okay. Do they look alike?
No.
All right.
And not even the slightest.
So they're, you know, they're honorary twins. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? They just, a lot of coincidences all. And they're born into this world full of magic. Everyone uses magic for literally everything. Mm-hmm. In the first few chapters, in the first few episodes, whatever your medium you're consuming this through, you see characters using magic to bake bread and wash their clothes and exist.
So it's science. Magic, yeah, is the new electricity. Like, that tends to be how a lot of these settings start off.
Yeah, it's so ingrained in everyone that if they don't have magic, it's like if any of us at this point in time, like, lose power for a week, just, it's the worst.
Big problem, yep.
And Yuno is, of course, the Sasuke of the group. He's the rival, best friend kind of character. Hyper-skilled, incredibly genius at literally everything he's ever tried or done at any time in his entire existence.
Classic anime archetype, yes.
Unnecessarily powerful. Like, just has an absurd well of magic just in him.
Mm-hmm.
For no explicit reason other than he just does. And in this universe, well, I'm going to talk about that in a second, because that is the other thing that actually is good about this show. But the other character, the other main character is Asta. He is the opposite, I suppose. Not stupid, mm-hmm, explicitly. Like, he doesn't, like, his characterization isn't like, I'm the smart one. It's just, he's not super skilled at, mm-hmm, any one particular thing.
When I think of a shonen protagonist, I think hungry, sleepy, lazy, irreverent. Is that, are any of those traits found here?
Hungry for sure.
Okay, yeah, classic.
You know, the other one's slightly, not, mm-hmm, too much, more just like hungry and adventurous and willful. Is pretty mm-hmm, standard. His whole shtick is that, unlike Yuno, who has an absurd amount of magical power and ability, he has zero,
mm-hmm,
at all, which is the most rare thing in this universe to have someone with no magic at all. And there's a lot of lore setting details within the first few chapters, as you learn that at the age of 16, roughly, around the time everyone hits their like final leg of puberty, they get given the opportunity to go to this like town hall in every village and get their grimoire manifested. And whenever they use magic, if their grimoire is out, it is more powerful, and they have the ability to manifest spells. They don't make them or like create them. They just pop into existence based on their need and ability.
Like, so the grimoire, that's always a book, right?
Yes.
I mean, the word grimoire means book, but like sometimes they just say words and don't give a shit about what they mean.
No, they're literal books.
Yep. Okay.
They're large tomes, and they're all ornate and decorated in weird ways. And the decoration is relevant to what the user's ability is. The more ornate, the more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular area, they're in the Clover Kingdom. The other kingdoms are the Heart and Diamond Kingdom.
Okay, great.
So I'm assuming there's a Club Kingdom somewhere.
Interesting. Look, the Clover to me, I would match that with the Club. Yeah, yeah.
There's a Spade Kingdom somewhere.
Okay, sure.
That's
sure,
what
sure.
I meant.
Maybe they'll go Sword. Who knows?
Who knows? But so every book in this nation has a clover on it, and most of them standardly have three leaves on them.
Oh, sure.
And apparently they stand for like strength, knowledge, and something, or peace, power. And, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't even remember.
Power, courage, wisdom. You know.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the last one, the fourth one, the rare one, is luck.
Oh, great.
Go figure. And Yuno gets that because of course he does.
Right. Right. This is the everything man.
Exactly.
Got it.
And
not every man. This is different. Very different.
And everyone freaks out like, this commoner has this grimoire. Also, that's the thing. Magical ability and magical power is directly related to social standing 98% of the time.
Bloodlines, sure.
The people who are the most powerful are financially and fiscally the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And are,
I imagine that started in the reverse order back in the olden times, but
assumedly.
Then, you know, yeah.
And, they're also incredibly classist pieces of shit.
Right.
Like, it's gross in some manga and stories and other, you know, comic books or whatever, but I'm just reading this, it's just like, literally eat the rich with your actual mouth.
Yeah.
And, the thing about in this setting is that everyone can see how, you know, lower class you are or not based on just how much energy you exude from your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And people freak out about that kind of stuff a lot. So it's fun to see them interact with each other when Yuno's like, I'm literally a homeless beggar boy.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't live in this church.
Yeah.
I'm stronger than all of you though.
Yep, yep, yep.
Bite me. So that's fun.
And I imagine this means Yuno was cast off from some, you know, important figure at some point, but maybe not.
Potentially?
Yeah.
There has been no explanation to this.
Yeah, they're not doing the origin story yet?
Nah.
Okay.
But, you know, everyone is surprised by Yuno and his ability and the fact that he is a commoner.
Mm-hmm.
They're also incredibly xenophobic. There's a character later on who's from Japan,
sure.
Essentially. And he's super powerful, and I was like, that's weird. A foreigner is strong. Anyways, during the ceremony, he gets this thing, and everyone freaks out because he's, again, a commoner, and it's an incredibly rare thing to get. There's, like, four or five other grimoires that have this four-leaf clover, and everyone freaks out about those as well. And Asta, he doesn't get one in this ceremony, but, Yuno does, and, you know, sadness occurs, people like, or Asta's like, I lost to my rival, sort of, but I'm gonna try again, and I'm sad.
Right. Well, you didn't have any magic at all at the start, right?
Nope, none, zero.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And, shortly after that, Yuno's attacked by some bad guy who's just trying to steal his grimoire, which is really dumb, because you can't steal a person's grimoire, because it's literally attached to their soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's annoying. It's a dumb plot line that I'm like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, people go deranged over various things, like, you know.
I guess. Anyways, during this attack, Asta gets his grimoire, which is just this dusty, rusty, black, gross, like, rotting page book.
Piece of shit book. Awesome.
And it just manifests out of nowhere while he's fighting this random guy. Asta, by the way, is incredibly buff. mm-hmm. being the only person in the world with no magic at all, to compensate, he is able to lift people with his hand by just doing it.
So yeah, he spent all of his time at the gym. Great, yeah.
He's like, I can't lift a car with, or a buggy with wind. I need to do it with my two hands.
I'm pretty into this trend. Like, for a long time, the sort of wish fulfillment media was often just like, there are these big bullies, and I'm the smart one. But that and that makes me superior to them. But it's just the same fucking, you know, fascism as everything else. Like, I like the jock renaissance, even though I myself am emphatically not a jock, but also the stereotypical jock is actually, like, changing image into, like, you know, a nice guy with a big heart who practices good health and cares about his friends. And, Mob Psycho, that we'll do that on the show at some point.
For sure.
The Body Improvement Club, that kind of thing. And, you know, jocks aren't the ones tearing this fucking country apart. So, like, you know, that too. Anyway.
Anyways. But yeah, that's his thing, is his physical strength. And he gets his book, and from it comes his giant, black, rusty-ass sword. And,
That's atypical, right? That's not a usual method of...
There are some magics that summon weapons. We see one later on, but it's unique in it, right. in and of itself. So this is interesting. And the guy throws his magic at Asta, and Asta hits it with the sword, and it dis-a-fucking-peers, because he has anti-magic.
Yes. I knew it. I knew it was coming.
And, this is the part where I was just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll watch this.
Because
in a world where everyone and everything uses magic, the only person who can just delete that and then punch you with his bare hand and kill you?
Hell yeah.
That's the guy who wins.
Hell yeah. I always like that. So there's a different anime that I consider to be almost entirely unwatchable called A Certain Magical Index.
Yeah.
That was the gimmick for that, too. That shit sucked, though. This sounds like, I mean, obviously you're having a better time so
far. Oh, yeah, it's far far less gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes.
That was modern
bad.
Day and some real fucking perverted lolly shit I don't care for one bit.
Not a
Listeners,
little.
If you don't know what that means, good for you.
but yeah, it's the rest of the story is about Asta and Yuno trying to fulfill the dream of becoming the wizard king or magic emperor, depending on the translation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And that whole shtick is basically just the most powerful wizard gets to be the wizard king. That's mm-hmm. it. That's all that is. There's also a regular king who's just royalty, but that's irrelevant. No one cares about the real king and the character. Hates it.
That's
it's
a
hilarious.
Classic, for a while, you know, Japan had an emperor, but the shogun was really the guy. And the shogun had the army, the emperor was just like, okay, sit in your castle, little boy. Like a real, this is a drastic oversimplification of the historical process, just so you all know. Anyway.
And that's the general idea behind what their goals are. That's their... I'm going to be the next Hokage kind of thing. I'm going
to
be the next...
To be the guy, yeah.
Wizard King. Which seems far more likely for the one who's a wizard, but that's not...
I mean, is this anti-magic not a wizardry of some kind?
It turns out, I don't think it is. Later on you find out that Asta's power comes from the fact that he has no magic, and his book, in it, or in him,
mm-hmm.
debatable, there is a demon. From which he summons power,
cool.
And since he has no magic in him, it doesn't kill him to just have the demon power in his body.
Okay, it's proportionate. Interesting, yes.
And that's a lot of fun. The best part about this show, or story, is the, like, ridiculous number of characters. They're in the dozens of dozens. Like, there's so many. And while most of them don't matter, they're all pretty darn interesting. And they all have really unique magic that obeys a really specific set of rules. The rules being that once you have a designated style and type of magic, that's all you have.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make things fit into that setting. If you have fire magic, you better learn to use fucking fire, because that's all you got.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing different kinds of fire magic being used in drastically different ways is really entertaining. There's a character who uses fire magic almost exclusively to heal. Because they use phoenix fire magic.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And is it dumb? Yes. But is that also kind of like, oh, hey, that's cute, that's cool. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a character who uses darkness magic,
mm-hmm.
so he just uses a sword and then shoots black hole slices at people.
Okay, that kind, yeah.
And it's just like, oh, cool, that's fun. I love that kind of creativity and power sets and skills. And it is fun to watch, while underneath that there is this fun story of people from poverty going and deciding, yeah, I'm going to fuck shit up and become the king.
I am really glad that every anime is about that now.
Like, hell yeah.
That's, you know, they're on the ball.
There's also a lot of stuff about, like, the genuinely fucked up and corrupt power struggle that has allowed the people who are in power to be in power, and the fact that it goes back to fucking eons of weird nonsense where they ruin the lives of multiple different cultures and destroy them in order to be on power.
Yep, they get into it. Hell yeah.
It's fun.
Cool. This seems like, you know, again, like we said at the beginning, you know, something fun to watch for the mechanics, if nothing else. But it seems like there is else.
And, yeah, there's a lot of fun characters.
Also seems like it would have a really great wiki.
It definitely does.
A super fun wiki on this.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's Black Clover. I do recommend it. Don't expect, you know, the next, like, soul-searching masterpiece, but it is good.
Yeah.
All right. Cooper, yeah. I think it's almost your turn. Sure, first, we should go to a self-promotion corner.
Right, absolutely. Here's the point, listeners. Let's get down to brass fucking tacks.
Let's do it.
We need some money.
Yes, we just paid our taxes, and we need some more money.
Yeah. And you can take the edge off. You could help us. We paid our tax guy. That's a distinction. We paid our tax guy to just tell him that we made negative a zillion dollars after buying equipment and getting a little back in return. And for those patrons who are listening, thank you so much for your continued efforts. And for everyone else, hey, if you gave even a dollar a month, if everyone listening to this gave a dollar a month, we would be not rolling, but like doing real well and able to easily get more listeners to maybe give us another dollar a month. If you gave us $3 a month, now you're fucking cooking. Because you get bonus episodes. Get access. I'm sorry. Please finish.
All right. Bonus episodes.
You get access to our in-development tabletop game. And we say in-development, like, it's pretty much done. We need to add more things, but the core is where it's at. And hey, if you like to play fucking dice games, you probably do. Get a piece of this. It's good. It's called Terra Magia.
Terra Magia!
Which means magic world.
Yeah, we weren't sure what to call it, so I just called it, because we were just going, oh, it's Earth, but with magic. So I was like, I'm just going to say that in Spanish and hope that no one cares.
It still sounds good.
Yeah.
Give us more money, here's what you get. You can decide what we do for an episode. You can give us an advertisement for you, or for your product, or for your philosophy, or for just really anything, as long as it doesn't suck. Again, you know, no fascist bullshit, no racist bullshit. Like, if you've gotten through this episode, you're probably clear where we stand on that sort of thing by now. You can even be on an episode with us if you've got the mic, and if you've got the time. We would be lovely to you for giving us that money, and we would be lucky to have you.
Indeed, we would.
The fourth one represents luck. Yes. Please review us on iTunes. Oh, yeah, that doesn't cost a damn thing.
No, and it's incredibly helpful. We would really appreciate it. One last thing before we go. Just wanted to say a quick special message. Not sure if they're even going to hear it. But Curtis, you have left us. Or you are leaving us tonight. But you're listening to this in a month. So who knows?
It's in like a couple days. But he's effectively, you know, so busy. He's basically gone, yeah.
And, you know, you've been a pretty fine fella and a good friend. And, we're going to miss you, and we hope you have a wonderful time in the Californias.
By the time this comes out, we'll probably have already seen you again for that one thing we're all hanging out together to do. But like, you know, but then you'll really be moved out, and we miss you, buddy.
We definitely do.
Hey, you're like one of the only people who's probably going to go check out all of these things after this episode is over.
Yeah, that's true. He does love to find new things, and that's one of the great things about him.
Anyways,
that's
enough. You're one of our number one guys, and that's all.
That's enough about you. Let's get back to the stuff we like.
Corner out. Well, Reading Rainbow. Let's go.
Yes. You're up next.
Okay, up next. I have very little of this actually experienced, but enough to talk about, because I love the premise that we're starting with here, and I've also read a little bit into the future of Alita Battle Angel, or Battle Angel Alita, depending on where you get it. It's generally one of those two things. A movie of this came out recently. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't. I never saw it. We're not talking about it. I mean, we could talk about it a little bit.
I watched it. It was good.
I have no possible frame of reference for it. It sounds like it smashed together you know, as adaptations often do, it smashed together lots of things from across the entire span of this comic that's been going on for a very long time. And that's the, you know, that's the shit that happens. I don't begrudge them doing a movie about it. Whatever. The point is, I read the first volume. That's the first nine issues. And I'm hooked, and I'm gonna get more. But, you know, it, for the time being, it's great. So talk about transparent, you know, class and hierarchy allegories. At least the comics of Alita Battle Angel takes place in the scrapyard. There is a humongous floating city tethered to the ground by big chains, and that's not the scrapyard. That's where the you know, hoity-toity fancy people live. There's literally just a big giant hole in the floating city. It's shaped like a fucking donut, and everyone just throws their trash into the hole, and it lands on the ground beneath them. That's the scrapyard. With, like what, you know, you see that picture and it's just like, oh, okay, this is the plot. This is what we're doing in this. And I love it. I just like, don't fucking sugarcoat it. Make it literal. We throw our trash down to you, you disgusting people. And then that, like, okay, target locked. We have an enemy.
Yeah, it's a real good way to set up the shitty bastards early on.
Yes.
I remember seeing it in the movie, at least, and thinking to myself, that's just a bad idea. Eventually, the trash is going to reach you.
Oh, well, I mean, it doesn't, at least so far, in part because the people, you know, in the scrapyard rely on it to survive. Like, pretty much everyone, that this is another feature of the setting, pretty much everyone down on the ground is at least partially mechanically augmented. Because bad shit happens, and you lose your arm, and then you need to build yourself a new one. Like, but the technology for that exists. And I do, like, in the comic, I love, like, if you've ever seen a beautifully rendered pile of junk. Like, this has the most visually pleasing, just intensely enticing depictions of, like, trash garbage. Not, like, food garbage. Not, like, landfill garbage. But mechanical garbage that's just, like, I could stick a straw into one of these pages and slurp it up. Like, the art style is just so excellent. Like, this is a standout for of art-wise among all of the things I'm going to talk about. And later I'm going to talk about some Grant Morrison shit. So, like, you know, this is meaningful. But it's just beautiful. And so, our very, very, very inciting incident. Our friend Ito, who's a guy who has an enormous chin, like his drawing, his head is just a really big oval. He looks extremely friendly. He wears most of the time like a really silly looking, probably was okay at the time, but like now looks kind of goofy, like detective outfit almost. And he finds a head, like a biological head, I at least mostly, like under the hood, it might be, you know, it has skin and stuff. A beautiful young woman's head in the scrap pile. And he's like, oh shit, you know, I wonder if her brain works. It turns out it does. And he is able to construct a body for the young girl who he names Alita. And he's like, hey, listen, this is perfect. Like, I've been fixing existing people my whole life. He's like a junk repairman. You know, people go to him for bio repairs. But never have I had a chance to, like, you know, I don't have a girlfriend. I'm certainly not gonna raise a kid in this world, but you're already here. Like, she's an amnesiac, but she still has basic life skills and stuff down. So I'm gonna call you Alita, and I'm gonna build you a body, and you're gonna be, like, you know, the perfect young girl, and you're gonna be able to have, like, a peaceful existence, and I'm gonna take care of you. Like he's very excited about a fatherhood kind of aspect of this. At least that's what I'm reading out of it. Like, it, you know, translate, it could be that it was supposed to be romantic. I really don't think so. That's fucked up. Anyway, but it doesn't read like that, at least in the translation. I don't think that's what it was meant to be. I have more faith in the author than this. The world fucking sucks, and everybody keeps on getting into fights, and there's a serial killer going around. At first, Alita thinks Ito is the serial killer, and that he's killing people and taking their parts to give to her, and that would be, like, a really fucked up setup. You know, I felt my breath clutch in my chest. Not really, that's dramatic, but, like, you know, I was tensed up for it. It turns out, no, it was just an actual serial killer who Ito then fucking murks, but with Alita's help.
And with a, like, rocket hammer.
Yes, with a rocket hammer. Pretty good, the rocket hammer business. And Alita's just a martial artist. She apparently uses the Panzerkunst martial style, which is, like, It's like a Krav Maga, like, you know, ultimate lethality used by a special space force or whatever.
Space force.
I'm sure there's more to it than that. You know, the movie gets into space quicker than this will, I'm sure. But the point is, she keeps getting into fights for good reasons, generally, and keeps getting her body fucked up. And then Ito realizes, like, hey, listen, my dream of just having, like, giving this woman a chance to, like, live a peaceful life is not gonna happen because we live in the fucking scrapyard and every other person is a violent criminal, including me. So, because he moonlights as this bounty hunter, which is semi a criminal, not exactly.
He's a legal bounty
hunter. Yeah, but still, every other person is a criminal and every other person is violent for one reason or another. So, instead, here, Alita, have this. He had this berserker body that he recovered from a spaceship in storage all along. He puts her head on that, and then now she is the Battle Angel, which she hasn't actually called herself that yet. But she's, like, ferociously indestructible at this point. And it's good because, you know, as is, like, it's kind of underplayed. It's not so in your face as it is with a lot of, like, shonen stuff, but she is very much just like a, you know, fuck the way it's always been. I'm gonna do the right thing. That's the amnesia, but also just like a, you know, it's bullshit that everybody lives like this. Like, you know, this bar is buried under a mountain of trash, and everyone's just cool with this, which is a reaction I have to about 20 things every single day. If you've looked around in the world lately, there's a lot of stuff that, like, for our own self-protection, we've just kind of have to be cool with. And I love reading something in which that doesn't have to be the case. That's fucking comic books, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, and her first major enemy, this is probably where it starts diverging from the movie, I assume, is just a big head on a serpentine spine that just engulfs into and punches other people's heads out and takes their bodies. It's fun. Absolutely terrifying. Her body is like, you know, so he busts into, like, the arena that where all of the, like, biggest and best blood sport happens and takes over, like, the reigning champions. Like, this thing is like 10 feet tall, 8 feet wide, like, ultimate super strong death body with, like, chain extending fingers that just slice everything to ribbons. They're like monofilament fucking fingernails, basically, that launch off. It's scary. And her body, they haven't come and set it up just yet, but, like, the big contrast is that everyone she fights is a behemoth like this, and she's, like, nimble and quick and has, like, plasma cutter fingers, basically. So not as much with the big flash and guns and stuff. And, like, you know, a criticism that could be leveled at it nowadays is like, hey, why can't the woman be buff? And I agree with that, but also, like, she's so cool. I don't fault the creation of this comic like 20 years ago. It's just, you can see the different aesthetics that have changed with time on it.
Plus, it also makes it seem more as though it's this young girl fighting right. These grown-ass men.
Right, right, right.
And while, you know, giving her a larger body is, you know, acceptable and perfectly valid, the smaller body does sort of convey that I'm a young kid.
Yeah.
Feel more so.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. She's not like 10. You know? No, no, I mean, no. She's like a teenager-ish in mind, as far as I can tell.
Between like 15 and 17, probably.
Yes. So
16.
Right. Something like that. 16-ish. The volume I was reading ended as she had just sort of created a big turning point in her fight with this, you know, parasite creature operating this super strong body, and she's just, like, blown up one of its arms. So I imagine the next couple of issues are just gonna be her doing a beatdown on this thing. And, like, there's, like, it's, like, cartoonishly evil. Like, this guy kidnapped a baby and jumped into the sewer with it and was like, you better come fight me about it. Like, just a real motherfucker. Like, I've read bits and pieces that imply they are going to get more into this character after his main arc is all said and done. Like there's bigger strings being pulled and bigger motives afoot. But for the time being, it's just, like, absolutely, like, I cannot emphasize enough, this is an audio medium, so it's not really going to come across, but, like, the art style in this is just so appealing. Like, the Alita is so cute, and that's not normally a thing that I, like, latch onto. Like, it takes a lot to kind of get me to be swayed by that, but she's so fucking cute, and is also, like, really cool to watch her do brawling shit. But, you know, but the head is always the same. And I am also excited to, like, I'm sure this isn't going to be the last body she ever gets into. Like, I'm sure there's going to be mechanical augments and other things that go on over time. And just, like, if you really like the Iron Man movies, you're going to be way into this. Like, this has a way more, like, specifically, like, you know, just watching, like, the technology shift and shape and transform and junk. Not the Transformers movies. Those look like ass. I'm talking about the Marvel Iron Man movies. You know, Tony Stark keeps his shit pristine. This is all grunt. Like, they're fighting in a sewer. You know, it's grungy, garbagey, but still, it has that. It has tech appeal. And it's just, I don't know, it's just spunky and fun. I'm digging it a lot so far. I will be reporting back probably at some other point when we do our Where Are They Now menagerie in like 15 years. I don't know.
We'll see.
anyway, that's that for me. Let's get into our final battles here.
So, I was thinking about doing another, manga, but I changed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Hellboy.
Hellboy. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So, Hellboy is, you know, a fun series of movies, but it is also, more seriously, a fucking phenomenal series of comics.
Mm-hmm.
I've only read the tiniest bit and love it. I, have been a bit busy with, you know, going to college, so I haven't gotten the chance to sit down and read the ridiculously sized chapters of comics that come out of this this particular storyline. But it's incredibly fun, and more so than anything that I've mentioned in pretty much any of these reviews, it is the richest with, like, hidden lore that is not anything anyone's going to tell you about, but that just sort of exists in the background in the random monsters that are shown but not explained or talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There's what seems like an actual endless, like, history of lore. Creatures that, you know, we can look up actual lore about them from the real world, and it reminisces towards what is shown in this comic book, but is, you know, manipulated and twisted to a more suitable form for this medium and for whatever story needs to be told. And the story revolves around Hellboy.
Yeah.
Who really should have been given a different name, but I'm not gonna.
No. That sets the tone perfectly, I think.
And Hellboy is a humanoid devil man who was brought to Earth as just a tiny little baby with a giant rock hand, summoned to us from the depths of hell, presumably, by Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, during World War II, his father, random old guy, was part of a battalion of, you know, Allied warriors trying to stop the Nazis from doing arcane magic to ruin the war.
Mm-hmm.
And in their efforts, they stopped whatever apocalyptic nonsense they were trying to do and managed to steal away young Hellboy, who joined them and became part of the family.
Yeah.
Skip ahead a bunch of fucking years, and Dad's dying. Hellboy's a grown-ass man, and also ages very slowly now, now that he's hit his maturity. And this is drawn by, God, what's his name? Like, Nick Mignon?
No. You're in voice actor zone.
Let me look up the name, because it's a name that I'm not going to get right, even if I did remember it.
Yes. Frank Miller. Absolutely not. The Nazis would be the good guys if he did that. Not really, probably. That's a bit too much.
You could probably cut that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, let me just... Mike Mignola.
Okay. Mignola. I wonder if there's a relation there. No, there's not. That is a different name.
Mignola?
Mignola. That's how it looks to be read, anyway.
Mike Mignola. He's the writer and the artist. He started in comics as an artist, primarily, doing, I believe, inking and some of the coloring for a lot of, like, older and popular DC and Marvel comics. And I eventually decided, man, I want to just do one.
Mm-hmm.
And his specialty has always been drawing monsters. And that's what he decided to just keep on doing. And he does it with great effect, as the monsters are hideous and appealing at the same time. His art style is very stylized in a way that I can't describe without making it sound bad, but it's sharp and edgy in a kind of malformed kind of way. Everyone's heads and shapes are inhuman, even the ones who are human, in a way that sort of gives off a strong personality towards each and every single character immediately. Hellboy himself is this hulking, sharp-edged man with this massive jaw and even more massive hand that just is imposing and clearly powerful, but is always drawn in these stances of, like, his shoulders pushed forward and his back slightly arched in a, like, defeated, another one of those days kind of guy.
Yeah, he is so charismatic. I've not read the comics much. I've just, like, seen bits and pieces, but, like, the character is really, like, a cut above, I mean.
Oh, no, he's beautiful. He's, like, you know how sometimes people refer to a character as, like, the cute boy who's just like, he needs to be saved.
Right, right. Cinnamon roll.
That's the one. He's the cinnamon roll of his own story. He needs to be saved and protected at all costs.
He's not a daddy?
No.
Okay.
That's Abe.
Okay, got it.
fight me on that if you
Abraham
want.
Abraham Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln, the fish man.
Okay.
Only
oh,
in
sure. Him. That's why Del Toro wanted a piece of this. He wanted a trial run.
And, Hellboy's incredibly charismatic in the, you know, I live a rough life, but I managed to get through things, and we're just going to keep on trying. I'm going to save people because of what else am I going to do kind of sense. Like, he's very defeated because the world sucks, but he's also very loving and, like, tries to do the best he can. Not because he wants, like, he wants people to love him, but he also just knows that it's the right thing to do and wants to feel like a good person. Knowing that whenever he looks in the mirror, he sees the iconography of evil.
Yeah.
And he just wants to prove to himself and anyone in the universe that he's a great person, and he does so.
Yeah, that's like, you know, it makes, like, Nightcrawler is the like, Marvel example of similar. But he, you know, he covers it up with being a real jokester. This guy is just, like, is more affected on his face by it all, I guess. But still is just like, hey, if I only do good stuff, then, yeah.
And he is definitely kind of like, all right, man, fuck off. I'm gonna go do the good thing now.
Yeah.
But it's never him being a direct dickhead to anyone, aside from a few times here and there. But, you know, everyone has a bad day.
Right, right, right.
And he's accompanied by a, you know, a fun cast of allies and friends who rotate in and out and are sometimes more important than other times. And they're all fun and have a clearly, you know, impactful relationship on him. They affect him and every time they're present in the way that he acts around the world. And that's fun to see in anything, just an actual character being not controlled but changed by the people around them in any significant way, or acting more this towards a person and that towards a person in a way that makes sense based on a relationship that has been established. That's something they do really well in this storyline, in this comic, is building his relationships with others and showing how they have developed him from the past to now. The majority of the story is just he's part of a secret government bureau that deals with people like him, which are just, you know, random monsters sometimes. And since him and his partners are monsters, mostly, they go out and take care of things. And anything that's we're a, I don't know, weird organization that deals with demons and monsters is always a fun premise for me. And there's a lot of storylines that I haven't gotten to, you know, like the ones from the movies regarding the end of the world. I haven't really wrapped through all that yet, but it's a lot of fun, and everything is incredibly stylized in a way that I can't not appreciate. The way that Mike Mignola does his art, it's incredibly shadowed. He, instead of focusing on the drawing, he draws incredibly quickly because he manages to tell a lot of his characterization, his design through shadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes a character is half drawn in and the rest is silhouetted in a way that really details him more than any other shadowing I've seen.
Hell yeah. Negative space. Just fucking blank it all out. And also, yeah, saves time. That's
saves time. And it does look mm-hmm. good. But that's really all I'm going to talk about with this. Hellboy is an incredible comic and a fun movie. Not the newest one. Check out the older ones.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is a good caveat.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Okie dokie. I can't keep myself held back from it any longer. God damn it. If this is a comics menagerie, then X-Men is going to show up. I just can't help myself.
Give me that X-Men.
So, specifically, this is the new X-Men, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely run, both of those gentlemen being veterans of this show. Not that they've been on it. We'd be dead.
That would be just wild.
Passed out from fucking blood loss and bled out. But I'm not sure why we're bleeding. Out of our eyes, maybe? I don't know. The point is, that'd be very exciting.
It's the penis. Just
straight out. We have talked about them on the show before, in multiple instances, I think. But so, the Phoenix Saga... I'm not talking about that today. This is stuff that happens just before the Phoenix Saga, and I want to bring this up as a very, like, I'm fascinated. I'm not as deep into the comics world as you are, Ollie, but this is going to make sense to you. So, like, I'm fascinated by the changing of hands of writers in comics for characters. Like, you know, here you can do a side story that's in an alternate universe or whatever. That's one thing. Or like here, you know, Marvel did like the what ifs for a long time. That's its own thing. But this is like the main X-Men canon that these guys have been given. And the sort of plotline examples here are them using that as a mechanism to alter the canon in ways that it should have been the entire time. Like, it's not retcons, it's not just saying, hey, that didn't happen, but it is like, okay, let's take care of some of this bullshit.
Yeah, it's weird whenever a character, whenever a book changes hands, a lot of things change, but it always seems like any shifting in writer, really, they focus on a specific character that changes so drastically, I don't mm-hmm. really... know how to I feel about it sometimes.
Yeah.
They've made such drastic changes between certain characters in DC specifically, because that's what I typically read, where it's like some of my favorite characters, I can't read certain comic books because right. it's like, this is absurd. Why is this the characterization? Why are they this violent yeah. dickhead bastard instead of whatever mm-hmm. they're supposed to be? And, has there been any drastic changes that have really, I don't know, hit you?
Well, so like this is not as character-y as like setting wise. The reason I bring this up, but like I mean, you know the phenomenon.
Yeah.
I tend to dip in and out of following things. I mean, I you know like everything I read is pretty much just one writer the entire time through. That's not to say there aren't still drastic shifts. Homestuck, but you know, they tend to get themselves sorted out if it's one person. Specifically, here's... This might be controversial. I don't see how, but it might be controversial. X-Men do shit in space a lot, and it always sucks ass. I don't care for it one bit. Like, Phoenix is its own thing, and that's like, you know, like, it's a major story arc for good reason. But this is like... So... I'm talking about the Cassandra Nova arc, which might be a spoiler in and of itself for people who don't know for sure. Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely, X-Men, the a sort of psychically existing twin of Professor Xavier, who was either a real fetus or not exactly in the womb, then got beaten out by Xavier as a baby self for control of being born. However, that psychic manifestation somehow turned itself into a real person and is now doing Professor Xavier shit, but entirely evil and, like, scorned. And this is a drastic oversimplification of what they actually explain, because it's still a comic book, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not going to do things the easy way by any means. superhero comic. But, So this is like one of my favorite, and we're going to get into all of the major X-Men kind of broad arc storylines with this, but this is one of my major favorite bits, which is none of these people are okay, specifically Professor Xavier. That's a problem that anyone can do that. And we talked about this in the movie. The fact that he's good is the only reason like anyone still lives on the planet anymore. Because if he was bad and Magneto was bad, fuck. It's all over.
Yeah, we're all screwed.
Yes. Cassandra Nova's real bad. And bad, like, they shake up a lot. Magneto, at this point, has his mutant nation off to the side. He's like, we're all gonna fuck off right over here. Don't bother us, we won't bother you. I'm gonna take in mutants, train them to be mutants, and we'll live here, and it's all gonna be a good time, okay? The X-Men keep kicking my ass, and I don't want any part of it anymore. but that's not good enough. Cassandra Nova proceeds to manipulate the, you know, ruling governments into beginning, you know, extra DX, double hyper-violent mutant crackdowns, and they bomb and pretty much 9/11 Magneto. Like an airplane crashes into the building he's in. I don't remember the exact date this came out, but that could be very crass, maybe.
it also doesn't make any sense. It's Magneto. Planes are metal.
No, yeah, you'd think so. I think he's maybe is a little old now or something. He survives. It is believed that he's dead, which is ridiculous. Emma Frost makes it out that this is where her first diamond form manifestation is coming in. And this sort of arc is what is introducing the secondary mutations to existing characters that are now just like a built-in part of them that we take for granted. The big thing being Emma Frost and the diamondness. She escapes from the rubble and goes to hang out with the X-Men after this, them being the remaining source of, you know, like she wants to help mutants, that like she's just lascivious and scheming, but you know, that's the next best place to be. Also, this is the introduction of a fan favorite character, Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Nice.
Who appears in the Deadpool films. She is in two panels in this before the building she's in gets 9/11 and she dies.
That's
she
unfortunate.
She gives a fearful warning that this is impending. Her powers are nothing like they are in the fucking Deadpool thing. She's like a gothy Oracle sort of a character. Not Oracle like Batman Oracle, just like at Delphi Oracle.
I feel like the new one in Deadpool makes more sense for its name.
Oh, yeah. No, there's almost nothing carries over. Other cool. than a general teen-like attitude of distrust. but she says, Emma Frost, something terrible is going to happen. And she says, like what? And then
they, yeah. You know, that's a shitty forecast.
Yep. Pretty, not everybody's mutant powers are good. She still qualifies to go to, you know, the school for little hellions or whatever it was called. Anyway, that's not the point. Like, basically, you know, this is, in my mind, in my imagination, this is Grant Morrison saying, no, we need to get Magneto back into the action. Sorry, Magneto, you're not allowed peace in your life. We need to stir you up. Which this does, eventually. He is off the table for now. Everybody's like, Magneto's dead. That's real sad. This was Cassandra Nova's doing. Next, like, there are more Sentinel attacks, you know, more open violence against mutants. There are also micro sentinels that get put into things at this time and are like nano machines that start fucking over the X-Men. So like everybody is getting sick throughout the entirety of this arc. Like nobody is fighting at their full strength, and that's just like an under tension going on the entire time. Eventually, I'm very much simplifying things here because a lot of shit happens, but like Cassandra Nova gets into Professor X's body. She like is overtaking the consciousness and pushing him down. He's, like, now imprisoned in his own mind. That's terrifying. And just as a general plot device used all of the time, but also, you know, for Professor X, it's extra double terrifying because he's used to being everybody all at once. And now he can't even be anybody all at once. And, you know, Cassandra, in his body, proceeds to start fucking everything over. This is another change that I think was, like, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, you know, whoever was responsible for this decision making, wanted to do this to the canon, like put their foot down. Let's make a big change. At that point, the school was just like a school for, you know, gifted kids or whatever. It wasn't officially the mutant school, but in Professor X's body, she says, like, calls a press report and says, nope, we're mutants. I've been teaching mutants this entire time. We're going to be open about it now. We're going to be proud. Like, she makes it seem sort of like something the guy would do. Like she's a good actor. But, you know, everybody, non-mutants mostly, but also people in the school are pissed at this. They're like, hey, shit, now we're going to have to be, like, 24/7 on watch. People are going to be trying to break down the gates. Like, this is a real problem.
Yeah, it's like outing a bunch of people at the same time. That's pretty shitty.
Pretty bad. At which point Professor X says, heard, I need to go to space now. And then he fucks off, and then he, you know, Nova, in the body, like, because Professor X has a space girlfriend who is the Empress of the Shi'ar Empire, and I'm like, god damn it, superhero comics, can we be cool for just a little bit? Like, can we just do stuff on Earth? That's where all of the social commentary stuff is. Like, what is this? I've never cared for them. And neither does Cassandra Nova, because she proceeds to, like, you know, essentially manipulate, brainwash, whatever, you know, the Empress, and into starting various, like, proxy wars and, like, getting different factions of the Empire to rebel, and then, like, just the whole fucking thing is coming crashing down. And the last few of them are like, you know, Professor X did this. We need to get to the X-Men if we, you know, like... And the Shi'ar, that's the other thing about them, is they always jump to violence. Anytime anyone shows up from space, it's like, even if they are sympathetic, you gotta fight first. And this is almost like a commentary on this, because they're like, we'll go rough up the X-Men until they tell us how to figure this out, essentially. So they go down, and then they fight, and then, of course, realize they have a common enemy all at the same time. But by then, like, other than a few named Shi'ar characters who are actually kind of cool, the whole thing is a bust. Relations with the Earth are certainly over with. Like, they cleaned the fucking house of this hanging, unreasonably complicated, distant, irrelevant plot thread, and I'm like, yes! And that's one of my favorite things about this whole, like, this whole plot arc. If you like the Shi'ar, you know, I would never take that away from you, but Grant Morrison did for a while, and it's the best.
Is that what you've seen in the shifts in writers for X-Men? More of a change in, like, the plot lines and the setting aesthetic rather than, like, actual character shifts?
Kind of. One of the things that does happen in this arc is the new Angel character, who is, like, young black girl, gets introduced. And I don't know what happened to Warren Worthington, but fuck Warren Worthington. He has the audacity to complain about being a hideous mutant the entire time when his mutation is super cool, would get him laid effortlessly 24/7, and he's also mega rich anyway, and nobody has any aspirations to take that from him. Fuck that guy. Pretty sure he's dead at this point or something. I don't know. But the, like, younger Angel, who has, like, butterfly wings and comes from, like, a terrible broken home. So the title in that instance is changing to a literal different person, which does happen all the time in superhero shit too. But, like, you know, that like, little things like that are happening here. Okay. But,
also, why not butterfly?
I don't know. I don't know if she actually has that, like, name on by the time this stuff is happening. She's just, like, new to the school. That's what Wolverine is doing off to the side, is, like, finding yet another young teenage ward to protect while everybody else is fucking off with serious things back at home.
Of course.
But this is where Jean Grey is first starting to, like, show... Because the word Phoenix is not on the table yet. She's just, like, everybody's like, holy shit, I didn't know she could do that. All the time in this. She and Emma Frost go into Professor X's mental realm, where for some reason, like, if they speak words, it will, you know, disrupt his thoughts or something. Like, they're in the realm of thought. They can't articulate anything too clearly. So the entire time, they're basically going through speaking to each other in, like, emojis and messing around in this, like, they're not really emojis. This is, like, years before. But it's like a bizarre dreamscape situation to try to get Professor X out. But they, like, are unsuccessful in their initial operation, and Cassandra Nova's about to, like, go in and kill off his consciousness, like, for real, for real. But it's Jean Grey who saves the day, first by getting him out of there, by And this, I think, is, like, badass in, like, the weird cosmic way that Grant Morrison loves so much, is, like, she's just sent a little tiny bit, just a tiny piece of Professor X into everyone in the world, just very briefly, so she could hide it, and then probably Wolverine went in and just killed the, like, you know, the, like, they got Cassandra Nova out into the different body that she originally had and then got her sliced up or whatever, you know. Like, I don't remember exactly how it played out. Please, comics nerds, don't, like, kill me about this. I'm just talking about big broad values. I read this a while ago. but, like, you know, like, cool, awesome, and then she puts him all back together, just fragments at a time, and then he wakes up and he's like, Jean, that's impossible. We have to talk. And that's, like, you know, just the first of many various big deals. So the Cassandra Nova arc is what I have the fondest, like, or the most cohesive memories of. After that, they get into the U-Men, which are people who just go and kill mutants and steal their body parts and surgery them into themselves, which is, like, a extremely fucked up, but also, like, a compelling villain. But it's not as much of what I was trying to illustrate there with, like, the, you know, canon bending. And it's also, I think, just slightly less interesting X-Men content. It's still good, but, like, you know, that's, this is, like, so many balls get rolling, or so many, like, lumpy, malformed balls that were rolling get stopped in this arc of this leg of the canon. I don't know where the fucking canon's at now.
Last big
young Cyclops has teleported in from the past to confront the insane older one, and that's all I know about.
Yep, that's the last thing I heard was that the most recent mega super evil horrible villain was Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
Again, somewhere somehow they switched a writer.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can guess.
Yep. I mean, you know, like again, that's what happens, right? Like, everybody gets the reins and then says, no, 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 no. Watch this. And Grant Morrison is the one I tend to agree with the most who does the watch this. But, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I intend to go back in at some point. You know, I've still got Marvel Unlimited cooking. It's a good buy. I mean, I enjoy it. But X-Men, he can't go wrong.
Meh. You can't really mess up with
the
X-Men.
If any of these character names have gone over everyone's head, listen to our X-Men movie number one review.
Yeah, it's a good movie, even in 2019.
Yeah, Jean Grey is, like, nothing anywhere near that caliber in that movie. So, you know, take some time for her to heat up, but yeah.
All right, I think that's everything we got.
Yes, 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 that's comics. Let's get the hell out of here.
All right,
Oh, yeah. What? Oh, God. We've learned a lot of things. What did you learn, though?
Well, I learned from a news update on my phone that there's protests by Japanese people who survived American internment camps about how the current status of illegal immigrants being held in detention centers is basically the same thing. Learned that, and now did you.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be like a month from that point when this episode comes out. But yeah, good. Protest. Again, the phenomenon of, like, why is everyone okay with this? That's, like, a classic thing that comics address on any side of the board. So yeah, that's what I learned. The rebel spirit is with them all the time.
That was a real specific rebel spirit,
right.
But yes.
Right, exactly. You know, that's fine. We can roll out with that. That's good news. Okay. You know what? It's a like, on the bar graph, if there's a dip up, we're going to call it good news. God damn it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Public dissent. I'm going to call that good.
Dissent is always great. I love dissent. All right, let's get
out of here before something doomed.
See ya. It's so hot.
Bye.